it may be a threat if our service and infrastructure is a disaster. Here today, we have invited you to interact with you so as to assess our state of readiness for that event as a first step to developing South Africa as a major tourist destination in the world. We want to position ourselves as a country for greater tourism in rural areas, in traditional areas, develop cultural tourism, development, develop heritage tourism, and so forth. We pride ourselves with a rare biological diversity consisting of 8 biomes, which is not common worldwide. It's rare. And each biome consists of different flora and fauna that creates an opportunity for attracting a lot of different tourists, among them those who want to get even more knowledge about the environment, about conservation, and so forth. In the process, as a country, we are looking forward to promoting our livelihoods and the situation for jobs, particularly in the rural areas, and particularly for those people that are not skilled, that find it hard to get jobs elsewhere. To test we wanted to know whether we are geared enough to train enough people, suitable people, to give the necessary hospitality, to create magical experiences for people that visit South Africa next year and beyond. For that, whether our capacities and resources are in line with the expected demand for next year, and if so, whether our networks are ready to up another year to meet that demand, if that demand happens to be much more than expected. So this we do for the sake of our country and to assess whether we are all really ready. We are your servants. You voted for us to take care of your country. We are doing so, but in turn we appointed you to look after our resources, capacities for the country, and to FEDASA, you are an important stakeholder to our government and to our parliament. We support your endeavors wherever we can, but we also thank every one of you, that is FEDASA, TETA, and SANPARK, for the contribution that we have made to our motherland so far. Without much ado, then, let us go to our program. The first presentation, which was supposed to be about 4 minutes ago, is from SANPARK. Then we shall have questions and responses. And I would like to request honorable members not to make a lot of statements, but to get into the question, because we are not having a lot of time. We shall be having about 20 minutes for questions and responses. And then from 11:10, then a presentation at 10:50 by Mr. Totesi of TETA, tourism, hospitality, education, training agency. And then there's the questions and the responses. Then there'll be a presentation by Mr. Brett Dunga of FEDASA, then questions. Then we shall then discuss a way forward. So in the way forward, we shall ask questions, we shall respond to each other, and then we shall make it a sort of a learning experience in our way moving forward. So I'm expecting proposals and then to get the way forward. And without very much ado, I have to request the first presenter, that is the South African National Park Board, to make the presentation. Over to you. Mr. Phillips and Mr. Spong, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. It's an opportunity for us to share with you our readiness for 2010. A word from our Chief Executive Officer of Apology for not being able to be with us today. He had a commitment that was long-standing that he could not shift, and therefore he asked me, Sydney Soundy, my name, and Mr. Glenn Phillips, to handle this presentation on his behalf. So we'd like to record an apology from our Chief Executive Officer. Chairperson, our presentation, copies of which have been distributed, will cover the background and the state of infrastructure, the maintenance requirements for the organization, and then we'll move straight into the issues pertaining particularly to 2010 in terms of our strategy and our state of readiness. I will cover the first three aspects of background, state of infrastructure and maintenance requirements, just as a way of giving context to how we have approached our preparation for 2010 and the background within which we found ourselves in terms of infrastructural challenges. So in terms of background, I will not cover all the points that you see in the presentation because you already have copies, but just to give you a sense of why we have the issues we're raising there as a way of setting the context. In 2005, we had picked up infrastructure as a major risk aspect in the organization, the state of infrastructure in general. And as a result, we made specific submissions to the department as well as to Treasury in assisting us to deal with the challenge that we had faced. The reason for that is that most of our infrastructure was created in the 30s and between 1930 and 1970, given the age of our organization. So as a result, most of the infrastructure actually required upgrade, renovations, and refurbishment. Over and above that, there was a history relating to the manner in which we had accommodated our employees, our staff, into settlements which were not necessarily humane, but were much more dormitories, and you found that people were sharing ablutions, families were sharing ablutions. And so we felt that that specific challenge would also need to be addressed. As you would also know, over the past 10 years, we also engaged in expanding our national park system to the effect that in the last 10 years, we've put together additional hectares under protected area management, particularly in relation to the management by South African National Parks, of 400,000 hectares. So each time that you put or expand your you require infrastructure that supports that estate in terms of your roads and other bulk services that are required, and in some instances the creation of tourism accommodation facilities and activities. As a result of that approach to the Department and Treasury, we were granted a 582 million allocation over a four-year period to address that specific challenge, that risk that we had identified. And the basis of that allocation was that we were going to use 40% of the budget for tourism-related, income-related projects, whereas the other 60% would be used for the things that I mentioned as having been risk in our assessment in terms of old, for example, underground water and sewerage systems that needed to be addressed, the roads, etc. So the 40-60 principle would apply. And as a result, in terms of that process, we've actually progressed to the extent that even though we haven't fully covered all the staff accommodation requirements, but 29% of our staff accommodation that were identified as not humane enough were upgraded. We also managed to upgrade 25% of our tourism accommodation facilities. And we are comfortable that in terms of all the sub-projects that fit into this infrastructure development program will all be completed by the end of the financial year, March 2010, bar for three projects which were a result of unavoidable delays. Our state of infrastructure is, in general, not at an excellent level position, but it is at an unacceptable level. So it is acceptable levels of state of infrastructure. We did a baseline assessment evaluation last year, and we found that in terms of buildings, of which we had 2.7,000 units that were assessed, we scored a weighted average condition of 71%, which means that that infrastructure in terms of building is of good condition. Our road network, which in total is 4,223 kilometers of roads that South African National Parks looks after. These are roads that are not looked after by provinces or national. These are roads in the national park that we are accountable for in terms of maintaining. 4,200 of those roads were weighted in terms of average condition at 68%, which is of fair condition. Now, that means that there will be a lot of work that needs to be done on the roads, both in terms of the tourism roads as well as in terms of medical roads that we use for managing the park, and also in terms of ensuring that we protect resources and facilities within the park, the roads that are used by management and not necessarily by tourists. I'm not going to go through each of the sub-bullets in terms of the amounts, but you can see that there's quite a substantial amount required for us to upgrade and get to a stage where we would be evaluating the roads as well as other facilities like fencing at acceptable levels. So as you can see, most of the money would need to be required for roads in particular. In terms of new infrastructure, as I indicated before, with that successful park expansion, and each time you do that, you require basic infrastructure such as staff accommodation, fences, and offices to manage those. And we will, in future, once we've dealt with the challenges that relate to the bulk infrastructure and support the infrastructure, focus largely on income-generating opportunities. Just to give you a sense of the maintenance requirement in terms of benchmarks, our replacement values for facilities is 5.8 billion. So if we were to put together the same facilities as we have currently at good condition, we would require to put aside 5.8 billion to do that. In terms of benchmarks, we've used national benchmarks of 2.3% as a basis on which you budget for maintenance. You will see that in terms of that benchmark, ideally on an annual basis, we would want to allocate 143 million to attend to maintenance issues. We currently have on an annual basis a budget of 63, something close to 54 million, which means that there is a shortfall of about 89 million that would otherwise be required if we were to manage ideally at ideal levels. But we know that the country faces a number of priorities, and within this specific instance, we are managing our risks accordingly and try to use essential methods of maintenance with the 54 million that we have. So I thought we should give that background so that you understand the context at which we then got engaged with the strategy for 2010, which Mr. Ben Phillips will take us through. It is within the context that Salasian National Parks has in its own challenges and programs relating to infrastructure that is required, and that was required way before 2010, and also will still be required beyond the 2010 period of the event. So I'll hand over to Mr. Phillips to take us through the specific issues of 2010.
Thank you. It's gone to the key principles that SANPARKS followed during the implementation of our 2010 strategy. The first key principle that we applied was that we wanted sustainable infrastructure development. And the initiatives around there were basically develop accommodation as per our infrastructure development plan. So it was not ad hoc infrastructure purely focused on 2010. We looked at 2010 and beyond that. And we also wanted to supplement what we currently have as tourism product with a tented product, a mobile tented product, which could be a sustainable, low-impact product which could be used after the event in places like Namakwa during the flower season where we have limited accommodation but we do need for a peak period of tourism, and then remove again and put in another place where there's demand. In terms of progress around that, the IDEP, the Infrastructure Development Program on new accommodation, we have virtually finished, as Mr. Sandy explained, with the budget that was given to us for those initiatives. And then the proof of concept around the tented product, the mobile product, has been communicated to MATCH. We presented to all the tour operators that have been appointed by MATCH, and there's a big demand and interest for it. It is a product that MATCH are not used to contracting. They're used to contracting solid hotel rooms with a normal hotel room in a city. So this is a bit different, but the demand from the operators is there, and we can see that this is going to move forward, and we're currently finalizing the financial models around that. In terms of once the financial model is complete and we understand what the demand is and we know we can pay it off during that time, we will then implement that product for after 2010. Basically, the issue will come down to budget in the day, but we believe that the return on investment makes sense in the model, we will implement it. The other key focus area was to ensure that we got optimal occupancy in all our parks over the event period. Keeping in mind that during June and July school holidays every year, we do run close to 100% occupancy in most parks anyway. So we were very aware of a displacement factor of the domestic market who pay rack rate over that time. Hence, we had to be very careful how we engage with MATCH at that time. We therefore agreed up front, and this was in 2007, we met with MATCH in Zurich, and we agreed that should the school holidays fall over that period, we would only give MATCH 30% of our inventory. Should it fall out of school holidays, we would give them 70% of our inventory. It so happened that as we know, the school holidays have now been extended beyond the entire period, and therefore we've only contracted 30% of our inventory. That contract will, if we look at, if we get 100% occupancy out of that contract, which is a 5-night stay, for, on average, is the package they're selling in a park, we should attract an additional 17,500 visitors to National Park during the event period. The rest of the inventory, which was 70%, was open for direct bookings in July, and we sold out the entire remaining amount, bar a few facilities that are still coming online, within 2 hours. And that was, the majority of that was sold to the domestic market that comes every year with their children on holiday. So we believe we have met that obligation of looking after the domestic market. Our demand for the Sandpox product in terms of match and 2010 has been justified around Nelfreight with the stadium there, and now the Matchville has been agreed with Match, and therefore we will have a key area around Nelfreight, of which Sandparks will make up 60% of the room inventory, which is those three camps, Pretoria, Scorp, Kakuza, and Bachendal, which will make up that inventory during that period. And the idea of moving forward now is we have to move and work very closely with Match to make sure we sell the inventory. We are interacting directly with the tour operators to see what their needs are as well, and we believe that we will do very well over that event period. Keeping in mind that whatever rooms do not sell for some reason, the demand from the South African market will still be there, so we are comfortable that we will achieve optimal occupancy over that time. In terms of the retaining the committed client base, which I mentioned, we kept the 70% inventory, as I mentioned, and we're comfortable that we've met that obligation for the future, and the demand over that period was so significant that it did sell out in 2 hours from the domestic market, which we were very happy with. Challenges going forward is that there is to basically deal with the media and keep the public informed as to what we've done. There have been some issues recently in the Sunday Times, same with what we're charging and how we look after the domestic market. So a lot of what was said was completely untrue. We are comfortable and we're willing to share that with anybody, how we've got to those rates and with the escalation of the 16% over the period that was agreed by all operators during that time, as well as the fact that you must compare apples with apples, the room rate versus a full board plus activities is very different. You can't compare them with just the room rate. I'm happy to share that information. In terms of optimizing our marketing opportunity and branding out of 10, which really I think is the key factor for everybody out of this event, is to make sure that we, in our case, put national parks on the map and conservation on the map. We firstly, in 2006, developed a product called the Kuduzela, which we trademarked, Sandparks. We partnered with a private manufacturer, and that was launched with the support of First National Bank, to help pay for the development of the product. We've already received coverage of the Sandparks brand just out of the launch and the media around the event of 3.4 million rand, which we would normally have to pay for if we wanted to get that type of advertising and marketing coverage. We have bought a sample of a Kuduzela for everybody, which you may take with you when you leave, so you can see what the product is all about. Essentially around the Kuduzela, we also, apart from the branding, which will carry the Sandparks brand all the way through 2010, we will also get a percentage of all sales that come to Sandparks. And essentially it's cost us nothing, other than the fact of us registering the trademark and the idea. So we believe that we've done really well with that. In terms of selling national parks over the event, we've developed a specific national park brochure for all the tour operators that have been appointed by Match, and that has been distributed through Match to all the tour operators around the country as listed here. In terms of the challenges around the accommodation specifically, as mentioned earlier, we do have a budget shortfall around 9 million on the actual soft, the furniture and fittings of some of the units that we're refurbishing for those areas, for the specific 2010 areas, but we will find the solutions around that and make sure we're on track for those. We decided to have dedicated camps so they can manage what we need around those camps. So it's not only just about accommodation, it's also about logistics during that time. Mm-hmm. The rules around Sandparks will still apply during that time in terms of traveling times and how you behave in a national park, and therefore we needed to try and isolate where people are and operate around the rules and regulations that exist. in terms of state of readiness, the match contract, if we are to sell the entire inventory allocated to match, the at 100% occupancy, that would bring in 85 million rand to South Africa National Park, and we're pretty confident we're going to be able to do that. The camps that are not dedicated to match, as I said, are virtually fully booked, except for our places like the Golden Gate Hotel, which is currently under refurbishment and will be finished in December. And also, we of course have set up a task team to manage all those key focus areas that are going to be required for 2010 to make sure that we don't miss the boat in certain key aspects, specifically around the safety and emergency services, around security, because we understand that if things go wrong, how we deal with those issues are very key in terms of the credibility of this destination. In conclusion, I think the IDP program that was implemented a few years back has successfully enabled Sanpark to participate in the 2010 event effectively and to contribute to the uniqueness and the success of the event as well. And the IDP funds were not just planned and allocated, as I said, to 2010, they were looking at 2010 and beyond. The strategy adopted over the World Cup was not to neglect the domestic market. We have looked after them. The 30-70% principle actually works very well, and therefore we don't need the plan B of how we're going to sell inventory that match may not sell over that time. So we believe we're really and well positioned to capitalize on opportunities during that event, to increase our market share, introduce new customer base to Sanpark, and of course to showcase conservation during 2010. And the budget shortfall will not hamper our effectiveness and readiness during 2010. And we're ready and prepared for impressing the foreign markets when they arrive in this country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. I think we are ready and prepared to ask questions. Honorable Cromwell, Honorable Jolly, and Honorable Shin.
Thank you, Charlie. Quick, we don't have much time. And to the Sanpark team, if at all possible, Chair, it would be so much more useful if we could get these presentation facts before we actually come to the committee meeting. Quite often, because of the pressure of time, we go through them at lightning speed, and you're trying to follow and formulate questions as you go along. I personally would prefer to prepare before we come. I know it's not always possible, and it's certainly not Sanpark's fault. But if we could get them before the meeting, I think that would help. My question, Chair, is just on the maintenance benchmark. Maintenance fixed at a benchmark of 2.3% of replacement value. I think any property developer or managing agent of a body corporate would be astonished to see that figure. I mean, I manage the Admiral complex myself. Our maintenance benchmark is about 0.5% a year. So you take a million rand building, at these rates, you're spending 115,000 rand over 5 years. I mean, it's just not possible. I don't know where that figure comes from, because it seems like a huge amount to maintain a building, not structural repairs or extension. I mean, very clearly put here, maintenance. I'm just wondering how, with the kind of places I've stayed in over the years at Sanpark, where you don't have, tiles which have cement floors, for example. I mean, you're staying in a national park, you're not staying in a hotel. How the maintenance benchmarks can be quite as high as that.
Perhaps it would be interesting to get some form of breakdown.
Thank you for the question. On the question of the shortage in the budget, the shortfall in the budget, I think it is specific to the speak of on the question of the shortfall. On the budget. In this particular presentation, you speak of a shortage of a shortfall of 9 million. I wanted to find out, what is it that will not happen if, for instance, the 9 million is not available? And how urgent would that those activities be? And also, I think we are interested to find out of what benefit will the activities that will happen in the past area of what benefit would this be to the local people in the area? And I noticed that your brochures have been distributed to quite a number of countries, but one doesn't see Africa then, and you don't see much of Asia either. But what does this mean about the support that you normally get from this country? Thank you, Jesse.
There's a couple of questions I'd like to ask. First of all, you say that the progress with your infrastructure development or maintenance, the development, you say all except three projects will be completed by March 2010. Can you tell us what those projects are and perhaps why they won't be and will we miss the revenue from them? The other one I want to know was you say that you're going to concentrate all the essential people in certain camps. Which are those camps? Why were they chosen? And I presume, and I'd like you to either support or dispute this, that that is where most of the maintenance budget is being spent, to make sure that those are good shelters. and also what expenses at what other camps is this taking priority over? It will be nice from that point.
Thank you, Chair. You know, ever since 1994, I've observed that tourism is actually the biggest contributor in our economy. I think the growth is good, but I am just worried about one thing, that black people are left out in the tourism. I've been in tourism for some time. But year in, year out, as the situation is in us. Blacks are not And everybody has been saying that the South African economy is growing, but it's not creating jobs. And the president has actually overemphasized the need for rural development, job creation, and poverty eradication. What is it that you are doing to make sure that you take communities along, the historically disadvantaged communities? For example, my constituency is just bordering the Kruger National Park. Villages like Wobel, Aston, they're just sharing the fence. But you see, tourism and themselves are not something that works together. And I would like to see a situation where these communities are taken on board to make sure that they share in the case. For instance, we're going for 2010 now, and if we cannot take them on board post 2010, I don't see where it's going.
Okay, let us get the response from Sun Park. Also, I think when we about these problematic areas like equitable redistribution, we also have to, aside from this meeting, make contributions and send them to organizations like Sun Parks through our other entities as well. Because I don't think on their own, without any outside pressure, they could be able to. So, or without outside interaction, then being in a position to meet their objectives. Before Hamas, let us get to the response of the department.
Chairperson, thanks, and honorable members for the questions. The maintenance benchmarks, I will deal with that. Mr. Phillips will respond to what pertains to the 9 million shortfall and what potential issues we would meet as a result if we don't have that 9 million. I will also handle the issues of the three projects that are behind, and Mr. Phillips will handle the three We note the concern raised in relation to the maintenance benchmarks, and we would rather not debate the issue in relation to how we arrived at 2.3%, because we don't have the specific technical people that did the assessment for us. However, what we will do is we will provide the committee through its secretariat our response to the manner in which we arrived at the benchmark, if that is okay with the chairperson.
So without that, before that information, wouldn't it be okay to say it involves painting, refurbishing furniture, or furnishing, replacing roofs, that type of thing, so that on top of the thing, we can work with the roads or what we are talking about when
Thanks, Chairperson. It involves the main support infrastructure, such as I've indicated, issues of bulk water supply and sewerage, given the fact that we have had a very old aging infrastructure, particularly in Kruger National Park and other older parks. It also involves roads, as you've seen, in terms of both tarred roads, but we have a bigger component of our gravel unpaved roads. So it's issues such as those ones that are affected in terms of the maintenance thereof. But as I've indicated, in order to be specific in, as to how we arrive at a specific benchmark, it will be important that we get a proper formal response to the question through the secretariat. Mr. Phillips will respond to what we would miss if we didn't cover the 9 million.
Thank you, Chair. On the 9 million, essentially we've allocated money where the new or where infrastructure is being upgraded. So a lot of the furnishings and fittings that need to go into the new infrastructure is allocated there, and we will then have to divert some of that money across to these properties. So essentially that would be the impact. We would like to, our targeted grading in terms of the grading council criteria is 3-star, and those are the benchmarks we're trying to meet in all our camps. And essentially that's how it's been worked out, so we need that to meet that. And not only just for 2010, but to take us beyond and keep that and maintain that. So the 9 million would basically be allocated from other projects to make sure we are on track for those specific camps and to set the standards for that period.
Chairperson, in terms of the delays, the three projects that are delayed, I can recall one specific one that relates to an EIA delay. Not necessarily delays in the EIA itself, but because we had to make changes ourselves to how we develop the place in the West Coast. So we have re-channeled that specific project into a different development relating to tourism facilities. The other two projects I can't specifically recall, but they don't deal with income-generating projects. In the scheme of things, they are very minimal in relation to the 582 million. If my estimate serves me well, it's about 15 million worth of projects that are involved in the delays in relation to the overall 582. As far as the camps that were chosen in the Kruger National Park, as Mr. Phillips indicated, it's Bergendal, Pretoria Scope, and Kukuza, but he will attend to the specific logistical challenges, or rather issues that were thought of in relation to the choice of those three countries.
Chair, essentially it revolves around logistics, close location of those three camps to KMI Airport, as well as the Skukuza Airport, which we hope to have operational for that period. So it's really around the logistics and the road infrastructure leading into that. Secondly, the number of vehicles that will be travelling during that time to ferry people to the airport at varying times, which would need to be managed logistically, and that's really why those three camps were identified.
Chair, in relation to socio-economic development issues, this, as you have also hinted, is a major issue and requires quite a number of interventions, not necessarily in relation to 2010, but even beyond 2010. Some of the ways in which we do this is through our concessionaire operations. We have specific requirements that demand that people who operate in our parks, either as restaurant operators or shop operators, have a specific black economic empowerment contracted targets, that they also get their supplies from local communities in relation to fresh produce in their restaurants. We also, in our bids for opportunities like those ones, insist on a specific percentage of local employment that should go into those opportunities, so that people of local communities can be employed into those opportunities. Overall, our own procurement approach to a variety of supplies in all these major parks also has a requirement for small and medium enterprise supplies, and also take into account local supplies. Indeed, we could do more in terms of individuals' benefits. What we do currently is in relation to the gates where we have opportunities for smaller individual entrepreneurs to operate close to our gates in terms of supplies of refreshments and curio shop stuff that can be supplied from those types of activities. I don't know if Mr. Phillips wants to add anything more to that.
Also, we're currently working on a project with First National Bank on developing open safari vehicle operations from our gates with the communities in those areas, especially for the 2010, to ensure that communities are able to get involved in that part of the business as well, being that their location to our gates and the opportunity that's actually presented during the event. So we're busy with them working on that project as well. And then secondly, I think in the socio-economic impact study that was done, when was it done?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, if you want to comment on what the impact of the jobs were. I think just on the socio-economic impact study that was done around our national parks, we don't have the figures with us, but it was actually quite significant, the multiplier effect in terms of jobs created in the local community because of national parks being there. So the rand value being plowed into national parks and what happens in terms of tourism opportunities being created beyond the park borders was quite significant. And we're happy to share that information as well to see where the impacts are.
Okay, and it's already 10:53. Let's go to Mr. Tottesi and then the other questions, we just go to know them, and then we'll be answered later. Over to you, Ted. aspect of the presentation. So one, you are setting up that we can be going on given the limited amount of time at our disposal.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Joseph Makageni. I'm the Chairperson of CETA. And with my team on my right is the Deputy Chairperson, Caleb Mabaso. On my left is the CEO, Mike Papete. And on his left is Mozim Wandla, the Skills Development Manager. So we take this opportunity to thank you very much for the invitation to come and share with yourself what we're doing. And indeed, the principal officer, Mike Potato, will actually do the presentation. Then supplemented, therefore, by the skill development manager. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and honorable members of your committee. It will be a great pleasure for us to be given this opportunity. And in response to the invitation that has been done to us, we then responded by coming to make a presentation this morning. But I take it that all members of the Portfolio Committee are aware that, look, the Tourism is a CETA established in terms of the Skills Development Act. But, and our primary department is the Department of Labor, and we serve both the Department of Tourism, Department of Sport and Recreation, as well as the new department that has just been formed, the Department of Environment and Affairs. Honorable members, the CETA specific plan is based on the National Skills Development Strategy that was put in place almost 8 years, if not 9 years ago. And we need to place on record that we have aligned our strategy to the NSDS 1 for the period the year 2000 up to 2005, and even the current year, 2005 up to 2010, has been aligned to NSDS 2. Okay. And we are currently...
Perhaps if your presentation could be ad hoc to 2010 in particular, and then how you respond to the expected expansion in tourism, given the limited amount of time at our disposal. So please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, Mr. Chairman, I think it is important that we should understand that, look, skills development will prepare years before the actual 2010, right? And for that period, I think I will deal with the slide in terms of what we've been doing up until now in preparation for 2010. But for 2010 and 15, the slide that deals with 1.2, which is the SDF, the large companies, I think almost, I'm talking about probably 10 slides down the line, they are actually geared for 2010 and beyond. And we're doing this pursuant to the service level agreement that we are meant to sign with the Department of Labor. Right? And it is therefore what we have planned to do. Right? And this plan is only going to be operational from the 1st of April 2010 and up to the 31st of March 2011. Right? And I must say, though, the plan that we currently have, right, it is actually, this is in brief, the plan that we have for this current financial year, right, and the projected expenditure from the discretionary grant of 26.4 million, Right, and on 2.1, 2.1B, and 2.2, right, those are the actual grants that we are going to pay back to employers that have actually embarked on the training. Right, the actual demand actually surpasses what we have actually planned. Right, we are actually expected to, if we had the funds, we would have to spend in the region of about 234 million. Right, and this is based on the demand that is there on the ground. And Mr. Chairman, it is unfortunate we're not going to be able to meet those demands because our expenses or expenditure is dependent on what is being collected from the levy payers. And currently, the levy payers can only be in a position to contribute in the region of about 140 million. Right, and if 140 million visas the 235 million is not going to be able to be realized. Right. And the important aspect, Mr. Chairman, that I wanted to draw members of this committee, given the time really, is we have the other priorities that we have actually outlined that we need to deal with, the provincial linkages and the imperatives. We have the equity targets to be able to meet. All our programs need to be able to fulfill 85% black and 54% female and the people with disability. And the next issue is what we're currently doing now is we are trying to go back to the schools where we can then be able to sensitize the schools in terms of the tourism subjects in order that they can be able to see a career in the tourism sector. To this extent, we have a national tourism exhibition taking place on Thursday until Saturday in KZN, but where we're going to be having all the schools, significant number of schools in KZN, including in other parts of the country, to be able to ensure that look, they are aware of the opportunities that are there. Right. Other priorities that you're probably aware of is the organizing framework for occupations. We're trying to ensure that the titles that we have in the workplace in terms of the job functions are clearly defined. They are able to be on a standard international benchmarking for purposes of ensuring that when we talk about particular job functions, we are not saying differently in other parts of the country. Right. And the important aspect that we as a CETA that we're responsible for also is the question of the registration of the qualifications. We cannot exist as a CETA if we have not registered qualifications, both short-term courses as well as courses that actually last for about a year. And to that extent, it is also important that we should also develop our offering. We need to be able to ensure that, we have training providers, right, where there are surfers, where there are moderators, as well as facilitators that can be able to take the training forward. Mr. Chairman, for the other project, I think that is geared for 2010 is the fact that, we need to ensure that from a sports side, we have volunteers, right. Not so long ago, the LOC has actually registered close to about 45,000 people to be volunteers, right? And it is our responsibility to a very large extent to ensure that those particular volunteers go through our programs, right? And we are in discussion with LOC in terms of the cost implications thereof. And also the fact that, Mr. Chairman, is also a reality, but that a number of companies in our sector are actually having serious financial problems, as they indicated. So we are going to be participating in what we term as training for layoff schemes. Right, for those companies that are having stress, and we're calling upon to be able to come forward and say, we do have problems. We're about to retrench staff members, and if so, what programs we can then be able to come up with a view to alleviate that particular problem. Mr. Chairman, in the next one, we're dealing with the priorities that we have actually gone through, and that will be reflected in the annual report, right? And we do have copies for those members who have not, right? And we've been part of the Sports 2010 related project. In this particular one, we are dealing with all sectors that were involved in ensuring that 2010 becomes a reality. So we brought them together,
discussed the issues with them and agreed in terms of which theta will take what. SAS theta will take security, BEP theta will take programs relating to trust, as well as transport theta will take the ones that deals with transport, and terrorism theta will be responsible for the ones that are hospitality and sport related. Life skills, the program that is up and running right now, right, in terms of those soccer players that have been playing and that are currently playing, right, which we believe that, look, they are not in a position to demonstrate life skills that are required as the heroes of this country. And we believe that, look, that program is going to come up with a success. And that program is coming at the end of September. So it has been going on for almost a year. But that goes with sports facilities management. We are now going to be having stadiums. But we have partnered with sports and recreation department to ensure that, look, people that get appointed to run those stadiums have the necessary skills and knowledge to be able to manage those facilities, lest we find those facilities becomes white elephants after 2010 has came and gone. But, and the fourth one relates to the program that we have with SAFA. Right. SAFA as a governing body to ensure that, look, they have the technical and knowledge of running in the organization which they have, that they have the necessary coaches. And this program is also, the short course has been completed recently, and you'll find them in the annual report. And we're now coming up with a full course, right, a qualification for level 5 for those particular coaches and all those things. The next one relates to small tour operators. This country is short of black, if I may say so, black tour operators, right, people who can package the destination management properly, right, and we're now currently reliant on big companies like the Welcome Tours to be able to set up these things, and therefore they then employ people at the tail end, the tour gap. And we believe that, look, black people need to play a pivotal role in terms of ensuring that, look, they are in the mainstream of tourism as well. Youth coaching, right, clinics, this program has came and gone, and this one we went to the legends, right, that have retired in the football fraternity with the view that, look, they can go and inspire children in our schools, but to be part of this particular program of football, and they have done fantastic work, right, and we're proud of that. The next one relates to boxing. Right, you probably know that, look, the Eastern Cape and Limpopo have been, including probably Free State, that they've been provinces that boxing has been the in those particular provinces, and we went back and to those particular provinces and say, look, we are piloting it, right, and we're looking for foreign people to come forward next slide for purposes of ensuring that, look, that particular sport is back on program, and the program has just been completed, and we're now doing the impact study to be able to see the performance on that. And the next one relates to youth development talent. Again, this program was intended to ensure that, look, children at school level are able to play the necessary sports. Right? And in this particular case, this program has been on for the past 2 years, and we're now in our third year, right, to ensure that, look, we have youth that can be able to play. The other program related to horse racing, right, and we realize that, look, in the horse racing fraternity, there are not enough managers. In fact, there are none black managers in that particular sector. Right? And we realize and make sure that, look, we speak to the operators there to ensure that, look, they allow black people to be able to have an opportunity, but to be trained accordingly to be able to participate. We have done that. Also in the jockeys, you can now be able to see black jockeys riding horses in those particular fields, which was very rare in that particular one. Also, that particular sector is still bound with the fact that, look, the literacy level is actually shocking, and we then had to come up with the adult basic program for that particular sector. Going forward, you're probably aware that, look, we're also participating in the game, the casinos, right, the casinos, and in that particular instance, we then realized that, look, there are regulations that are governing the casinos, and a lot of people that were running those casinos might have since forgotten those particular regulations, and the program that was geared to that, and it has been very successful. And the next one was the buzzeries for racing as well, which I've just touched on, and the mobility services related to programs like chauffeurs that you'll find them in the rental cars, that will be able to drive people during 2010. That program has just done the completion in terms of ensuring that we have people that are trained to be able to drive people around when 2010 is around. And, Mr. Chairman, the next slide deals with the actual targets that we have achieved, right, in terms of the programs that we have done up until 2009, right, and these are actual, which you will find them in the annual report, right, in terms of how we have structured the service level agreement. The next slide, Mr. Chairman, deals with the levies that we receive. We are having access to discretionary grants, and we're having access to administration costs, but and the mandatory grants remain in the custody of employers that are paying the levy, right? And regrettably, right, almost 70% of the both the discretionary and mandatory tend to be taken over by those particular companies and do the training.
I think we'll get an opportunity for the overall report of the activity of CASA when we deal with the annual report. Right now, this one is just to see how we are preparing ourselves both for 2010 and the springboard for the future. So I think most of the things we have answered already, but if there is still something remaining, then you can touch on it.
Mr. Chairman,
you get what I mean to say.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. You are actually right, Mr. Chairman. The bulk of the issues that we believe that look were here for 2010 has been dealt with, but the rest of the other slides are actually dealing with what appears in the annual report, and members had the privilege when the Minister of Labour was presenting the annual report, but and we will be prepared to take questions, Mr. Chairman, if it's possible.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, because you are on the supply side of 2010. Will you be in a situation to supply enough to respond enough to your demand in 2010 to your long-term demand, and how have you replaced it? What institutions, what are your networks that lead you to come to conclusions that you have come to when you are planning which information? Those types of things, but I think members are going to ask their questions. Definitely, then Honorable Farah.
Thank you, Chair. Representative mentioned that there are about 25,000 volunteers that have been trained, maybe. How many out of these are from the rural areas? Another thing, what is going to happen after this 2010? Are you going to provide them with the employment, or they are going to be dumped after the 2010? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is really, I have a lot of questions for you. I personally wondered if we have started the particular time, we can get deeper into their work. Because I'm from the rural area, and I'm always questioning myself, what is that they're doing for us? Since today is concentrating on the urban areas, that's my lecture that we may consider for the second time to come and do us the day. would have been told about the annual report, and she did not attempt to respond on that question. But I just emphasized the fact that her attempt will be finished here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Honorable Victoria and Honorable Shin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am like my comrade, I'm from the rural area, and I'm highly concerned about the fact that Tita is there and we don't see it in the rural area. But I have gone a step further to actually write several letters to Tita to allow me to assist in training people in the rural area. Some of them were never replied, but ultimately I got one official from your department. She told me your office was in center, somewhere there. But if I wanted to do what I wanted to do, I must give her 35,000. So you see, I'm just an ordinary member of parliament. I've never actually had an excess of maybe 5,000 in my hand. And it means the rural areas will never have that opportunity.
Thank you for the presentation. It's obviously a huge subject and we can't pay it any real sort of thorough attention right now. But I would just a sort of general query on this. You say that you're cloning a significant number of unemployed people. You then say that you have a tremendous shortfall of levies, which are the employer body levies, I presume. Are you not overtraining for what the industry demand is? I mean, are these people actually finding jobs? Are you just training people simply because they want a job? But is there enough employment for them to be absorbed into gains in employment? I just have a problem that you're training people willy-nilly without actually understanding without having a clear insight as to whether there's actually a market that will absorb their skills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Honourable Members. I will reply to this, and Mzee will also come in and indicate as to the peculiar situation which we're finding ourselves in. But in respect to the earlier question of volunteers in the rural areas, first and foremost, I need to place on record that, look, for TITA, we only come in as a partner for training. LOC is responsible for the advertising for volunteers, selection and vetting of those people that needs to be part of the volunteers. As we stand now, right, we're not sure as to who are coming from the rural and who are from the urban areas. Safe to say that, look, when the program commences in March, as you're probably aware that, look, there's that vetting process that's still going on now. The program, in terms of what we have agreed upon, is that it will commence right on the 23rd or 22nd of March 2010, right, to prepare those volunteers to be able to be ready for the World Cup. Right. What we do even before that, you're probably aware that, look, we were part of the training of the volunteers for the preliminary draw in Devon, right, and we've been part of the volunteers that were actually placed at the strategic airport, both in OR Tambo and Cape Town. Right, for the preliminary draw, we trained at least 400 volunteers, which includes the staff members of the LOC. Subsequently, when we then dealt with the Confederation, we trained a significant number of volunteers that were actually made sure that they are part of the program that you have gone through.
Right, so we're ready for 2010 again to be able to contribute for the volunteers. I will indeed determine right, from LOC as to how many of the people that have applied that are coming from the rural and how many are coming from the African countries and all those things. That's insofar as that is concerned. With regard to the training in the rural, right, and that deals with the second question and the question of Mr. Tolle. Right. And training in the rural, I must be honest about it. It's not taking right, in the manner in which it's taking up the institutions in the rural areas, I mean in the urban areas. I think there are particular reasons. For us as an authority, we are dependent on employers to be present in those particular rural areas. We are dependent on training providers to be present in those particular rural areas because those are our delivery right, partners right, in terms of ensuring that local learners right, will be able to get experiential learning, but they will also be able to get the theoretical part of the training. So the two components play a pivotal role for us to be able to deliver on this. Now, for Mrs. Tolle, honorable member Tolle, indeed, I am saddened to hear that, look, this is what we have gone through, right, in terms of having to be asked to pay for whatever training or being a training provider. TITA does not require people to be to pay for being part of the training. We had the first training for free for all those who wanted to be training providers, right, and we now, in the second phase, where we then said anyone who wants to be a training provider in our sector must come on board. Right. The only thing that we require you is to ensure that look, you are available throughout the duration of the training. That you will be available throughout the duration of the training. Right. The third phase of ensuring that look, there is capacity. Right, for training providers, we have decided to write training programs and make it available free of charge. What we require you is to sign a contract, right? And I'm saying I'm certain if there are those practices out there. Yes, I'm aware of people who developed the learning material in the past and they were selling it, right? And it is on that basis we decided to enter that space and say we shall provide them free of charge to whoever wants it. And I would going to encourage people that they should utilize those facilities in respect of the training providers. And I'm sure I will put Mr. Mwanda at spot to take the last question from Ms. Sain regarding unemployed that are being trained and the shortfall next for the sake of that.
Thank you, Chair. Well, in regard to the supply and demand, I think it should be important to mention that the data is not necessarily an agency, but an authority, which is responsible to make a provision of training available in terms of funding, in terms of making training providers available, and qualification and the like. So the actual people who does the training are the training providers that we give accreditation to. As to who they train, and I think those are the people who actually charge any person who wants to train, because for them it's business to do training. And for us is to give them accreditation. It's like any school that charges tuition fees. Those are the training providers. And then when it comes to the demand as such, what happens is that we make funding available based on the employer application. In other words, the employers are the ones who indicate through their workplace incident that they submit to us to say that this year I'll require so many dealerships, and in many cases there actually that demand actually exceeds what we can fund. So I wouldn't say that we just allow training to happen without any employment opportunity. And in conclusion, it has become important and very significant in the industry, whereby we see learnerships being used as a recruitment strategy. By a number of our tourism enterprises. In other words, if they want to recruit young people in particular, they will take them and put them through learnership for a period of 1 year, of which SITA funds, and they are also taking responsibility to ensure that there is workplace and they provide theoretical training. And a number of those learners, I'll say to the extent that almost 100% of learners who are being recruited, especially as unemployed people, they get placed by those learners. And then there's a difference whereby the training providers themselves apply for learnership because they will do training for the sake of making money for themselves, that is because they are running their own business. Thank you, sir.
Sorry, Mr. Chair and the House, if I may also just add, especially on the point of which was raised by one member around the question of saying, how do we actually assess what sort of training the industry requires? Are we not overtraining for areas where we don't require, where all these people placed? I think it becomes a very crucial question, because I think at the start of the CETAs, the emphasis was really to go out and really train individuals, and these questions were not really so emphasized. So the mode that we're operating under was possibly a bit flawed. And we've identified this as well as a board in saying, from the assessment side, at least we've got reliable information in the workplace skills plans, because the employers themselves come out to us and tell us that this is the type of training that you require. Where we possibly are still lacking in terms of the assessment in the information is some of the questions that are being asked and saying, are these people getting employed? We've got a sense, and our sense will possibly say, to some extent they are, but whether we've got scientific information that's reliable is a critical issue, and we are, as an authority, are still going to be going through and doing that exercise. And I think as soon as we are done with that, because we have said as a board we want to do that, it's some of the information that at some stage would have to send through to the committee through the secretariat.
I think, Chair, that just the last point is I think we welcome that to other arrangements as chairman of that board, that if we are invited to come and share with yourselves so that we can close the gap between ourselves and the people that we serve, we are really willing to come and share into detail. And also, last, there was a concern to say several letters were written to us and they were not replied. We are willing, I mean, the CEO, to take this up with the honorable member, because in our view, if people, I mean, members of parliament, people who have gotten access to facilities, call us and then we don't respond. What about those poor, the poorest of the poor, who don't have facilities, who cannot reach us, because indeed we are incentive, because we need to follow that up immediately, so that indeed we don't wait until these questions come. Thank you.
Yeah, sometimes it becomes a sign that people refuse to account to the public because of the public representation. Then the next question is then, why should they be in the public sector? And any accountable Democrat knows the answer to that. So it needs to be resolved. But without much ado, let us go to the next area. Pardon me, we are still going to ask questions under general. We just want to have as much distinct presentation as possible so as to to try and see how comfortable they are with that. So it's a pity that we could not get met. But over to you, Mr. Brent Dunlap. Thanks.
Chair, members, thank you for inviting us, and I think I'd first like to say that we are actually a happy and a compliant industry, and I hear that we have challenges, that goes without saying, but as private sector, we really are looking at working around those challenges to deliver. I thought I would just let everyone know basically the area that we play in, so that you understand who we are as FedArthur and our interactions, particularly with the delivery around 2010. And I'd like to start with the FedArthur board, and basically to explain that the FedArthur board is an accommodation board. And what we've done on that is brought in the players that we believe were necessary for delivery around 2010. I've brought it with, and I'll explain, but I'm not following that, so I'd rather just sit back and listen, that would be easier. We've got members from the Tourism Enterprise Program. We've got Mike from CETA sits on our board. We have, obviously, the FedArthur representatives. Caleb is one of them. Department of Environmental Affairs, well, it's now Tourism, sits on the board. We have a member representative from MATCH, and we have a lot of the hotels, City Lodge, Southern Sun. We have TEXA, we have Deloitte and Touche, we have South African Tourism, and we have then the Tourism Grading Council. So just to explain that FedArthur deals with all issues around delivering accommodation, making sure that they're standard, and communicating that onto people. That is the association I'm representing today. We then sit on the TBCSA board, which then goes further into airlines, you know, the transportation and other sectors, and other associations like FASTA and the like. The industry is only theoretically 10 years old, well, that's in 2004, in that tourism was very much a haphazard industry, and we got everything together. It was around that time that we then had the bid committee from SAFA approach us and talk about the delivery of 2010. And I just want to explain how long we've been working on this and how the setup and structures have been in place. They then went to FedArthur, which was the accommodation representative, and said, can we secure rooms for this bid, which was a commitment that was made at that time in conjunction with Minister Vali Musa from the department. From that time on, the industry has dealt with MATCH and FIFA and no differently than it would deal with any other conference organizer, in that the only exceptions were that it was a huge conference, covered many cities, and over a very long period of time. And we then were handed over from SAFA to MATCH, who were the registered body organizing the committee. And all I can say, and Stan Parks and ourselves have been involved with them for over 5 years now, from the beginning, the relationship has been transparent, beneficial, and in fact has been a learning curve for us as an industry that I don't think we would have had under any other circumstances. Our challenges around, at the time, one-night stays and the logistics was all taken into account, and the contract that resulted was the hotel contract and the non-hotel accommodation contract to deal with the B&Bs and smaller businesses. That was all done with transparency and the understanding of bringing, at that stage, SMMEs that hadn't been dealing with these large conference organizers into a properly organized logistical table and mechanism. to date, 82% of the structured hotels, and that's where I'm talking about the graded hotels, the larger hotels, have signed up the contracts with Match. There is no more accommodation to sign. Now, that makes up the bulk of those, of the 45,000 rooms that have been delivered to Match for the FIFA contingency. That's the team, the authorities, and the delivery of the match. We have had our biggest challenge as an industry is actually working out how many rooms are in existence. And to our best count right now, fit for purpose, there are maybe 100,000 rooms available. Now, it has highlighted challenges. We don't have any problems in this industry of things like the grading council, the tourism enterprise program, on how do we start bringing these communities together, at what stage do we introduce them to mainstream. Because the one thing through this recession and the bad economic times is that had we not been focused on sport right now, our industry would have been in dire straits. And just explain to the members that the reason that hotels, and we envisage, or I personally envisage, 20-30% loss of accommodation across the sectors over this next 18-month period is that in the good times, and there were some very good times, hotels put money into their bonds. What they then did was took in the bad times, drew from their bonds to then carry on the cash flows of the business. The banks have closed that avenue, and as a result, the cash flows have become tremendously under pressure. So just to make people aware that as much as we have this tremendous growth, infrastructure development and that, the business of tourism is actually a borderline business. We see some fantastic results out of the large groups, but that's only because of economies of scale. The cost of building and the red tape of doing business is incredibly high for our industry. The next strategy, well, of the SMMEs, only 13% have signed up. Now, I hear lots of comments about how are people getting involved in that. I don't know if it's of a lack of understanding around the logistics of this World Cup, but to understand that if you want to participate in this World Cup, you need to actually be involved with the organizers. And I've seen Glenn referred to the Sunday Times article. That was incredibly frustrating and upsetting to the industry because we've worked so hard. We've been working for over 6 years at delivering. And all of a sudden, people are waking up to the fact that now, have I missed the boats? Why am I not involved? The decision to join and sign contracts with this particular conference organizer was made open to everyone. In fact, between TEP and Match, I've never seen as many roadshows and presentations done for anything else involved in tourism. So the information is out there. There are people that have chosen not to accept that invitation. And we're quite comfortable. But I do warn the committee that after the event, we are going to hear things of price gouging. We're going to hear complaints of people not getting business. And I say to people, you may well receive 10 times your normal rate for one or two nights during the event. But for the rest, you're not going to be full for the 30-day period. Because I don't know if the committee is aware, the logistics, you will have one spot for the whole of the World Cup. So the place you go to stay is where you will be for the duration of the event. You will then be moved from there to Durban, Johannesburg, Cape Town. So it's not possible for a B&B in a name, George, to think that they will have anything more than the games that are going to be in their area if they're not on the network of delivery. And all our other infrastructures are going to be under tremendous pressure at that time. So it's not going to be a case of just getting onto a bus or a plane inside of that. The whole network and logistics and why we have supported Match so through all of this is they are going to lay on this entire infrastructure for delivery. To the point that when the commitments came through that we could not or did not get enough sign-up, we suggested that Match look at other SADC countries, which was then the taking of Matchville in Mauritius, which was 3,200 rooms. We've also been through the process of the ships coming into harbour, particularly here in Cape Town. I heard news that the QE2 is not coming to Cape Town. It concerns me tremendously when I hear that three other ships are coming in, and that wasn't an issue for anyone. Now those ships are coming in. The money that was coming to our accommodation is now not going to come in. As an industry, we're not complaining, but we're just saying that the double standards applied to this particular business venture really made no sense to us whatsoever. And it would be like asking for business cases for every hotel in the community, which doesn't happen. It has a double standard which, as private industry, we battle to understand. Sure, there are reasons, but we'll get to that later. The constant comment of rates. I've asked, we then sit over and above the other communities on a thing called the Match Advisory Forum, which is where the members of Procure Hotels, the LOC, myself as Fed Arthur, Southern Sun, the Tourism Grading Council, SATSA, the Tourism Enterprise Development, Don Suites, TDTSA, and SAFA, and in fact Jerome Belke sit to keep a constant update. And this presentation is the latest information available to you all on ticketing, hospitality sales, accommodation, and transport. So that is what this presentation is. And I ask you to go through it. It's a factual state of the nation, basically, of where we are in delivery for particularly the accommodation sector. The rates, which are also in here, and I see Glenn had to defend on in his Sunday paper, and I just ask you, if you do have a look at that article, it was called Match Fixing in the Sunday paper, and please take particular note of how every hotelier responded to that. Every hotelier had no issue. He had only positive things to say, and I ask that people may take cognizance of the fact that these are huge business operators. They wouldn't be doing it unless it was good business sense. So to constantly be questioned as to what are the intentions of MAP, how is it going to work, it's no different to our normal course of business. And tourism's business is complex. It's complex beyond the channels, which is how we get our business. It is normal for a business dealing with an international operator to pay at least 20%. That's 10% for the local operator, 20% for the that's 10% for the foreign operator. We have an additional item here, which is the extra 10%. But what it also does, and that is for the sponsors and other people, which is the channel that has to be supplied. What we also have here is that the prices that have been negotiated were done so on an equitable basis. And when we went as a team to Germany for 2006, is the prices have come out at less than half in dollar terms than what we paid 4 years ago in Germany. So when people talk about the price of accommodation, that is not a fair statement. What they might say is it's been a long-haul destination, and on top of that, having the logistical infrastructure of moving people around. And when people ask, why did we have to do that? Simply because we don't have enough accommodation, like in Germany, to hop the entire contingent from city to city. So it was done so that we could actually deliver. Our industry has taken this and supported it in that we envisaging that Durban, as we know, will be quoting for bidding for the Olympics, that there will be other huge sporting events. And we want to know that those people come into South Africa because they understand that dealing with us is easy. And we have done that. We have surpassed any expectation that FIFA had in the delivery of accommodation. On the SMME side, we do see and we have agreed that we will assist in a last-minute bookings. We're talking about something called the Rooms for You that will allow a last-minute booking to take place. But I need to just raise the reality, and I hear concern about leaving the small B&B out. There is a responsibility from any operator wanting to play on this field to actually get engaged with the program. And to change an entire system of delivery for selling rooms and accommodation because someone doesn't have email is not correct for an industry wanting to deliver. What we must then look at is who is responsible for making sure that those developing places get onto the playing field. So the understand and support what needs to be done. The question on the BEE side of things, I'd also like to raise industry that as an industry we did the BEE scorecard, our stand or our targets were far higher than were actually eventually passed by the DTR through the codes of conduct. So what we as an industry had committed to was already higher than what was passed back. Most of the big businesses already are compliant to the 2014 deliveries. We have triple bottom line reporting, which deals with the social economic impact and deliveries. And I just say we can't keep on having more and more thrown at us. It is an industry already that is under pressure because there are huge amounts of regulations, bylaws that we have to contend with. We are sitting with 400 or 500 million rands worth of development that by the end of this month, if we don't get permission to start building from the local authorities, which have already contracted now for 2010, will not be ready in time. So when I hear about, you know, what are we going to do, those are the issues that are being faced with. And there we do turn to the public sector and say, please help us. And that's between the large groups, which are good corporate citizens, who are wanting to create more space in these times. So we need to have a look at that. The service issue came up, and all we're asking is that as hoteliers, we end up doing a lot of business that is not our job. Security is not our job. You know, roads is not our job. So to question the standards of delivery inside the hotel, when the hoteliers are going to go out and try and ensure their environment, it's not fair. And I'm asking that we just focus on the actual issues. But if there's assistance or for us to work together, we are structured. Anything through the Tourism Business Council will get to all of the industry. I could go on for long. The issue we have, and the only one that we ask huge help with, is that we are concerned about the transport delivery for 2010. We know that the buses are being committed. We are concerned about the driver training program. We are concerned about the number of drivers and the communication between transport and the private sector to ensure that those deliveries are met. So if I have one request, Mr. Chair, it is that we engage on that and the building of those or the permissions to build what's necessary and committed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, as long as we concentrate on the Monday, it will be okay. The Honorable Mr. Trumbull, the Honorable Shin.
Thanks, Chair. I really struggled through this presentation, and I'm sure it's because of my ignorance and not because of Mr. Duncan, but, you know, the entire presentation, which we didn't have any handouts for, seemed to be responsive to various issues and other things that I'm not aware of. And there seemed to be a staggering amount of information that was, there seems to be an evidence which I simply don't know. So I was very confused, and I consider myself someone perhaps who should have been able to understand what was going on. And there's a lot that I missed on what Mr. Bungan was saying. So can I ask, and really go to my opening comments again, this time I'm only getting the documents at the meeting now, I'm not getting any documents at all. And then there's a presentation that some of this incomprehensible triple line, bottom line reporting. I mean, this is a tourism committee. So can I please ask that, I'm absolutely convinced that Mr. Langdon is an expert in his field and he represents his organization superbly. I'm not doubt about that, Chief Minister, but we don't have his expertise or his experience or And I'm also convinced that what he had to say to us was incredibly important, but I just got lost trying to make most of it. I'm struggling to understand. Could we please ask him to you, Chair, can he present a paper, even if it's just a sort of background to what he said to us, so he can give us some of the background information that I think he was referring to, but that many of us, I'm sure, are not aware of. So we can actually study this at our leisure and try and pick up some of the important issues that he presented. I really didn't
yes, obviously this is an awful lot that we know this, as say as you are there with the all the details. But I gather that you're having major problems with things that were supposed to have been sorted out long ago. Like you talk about the backlog of municipal approval to develop whatever these infrastructure projects are. I'm not sure what you're talking to there. But you know, for goodness sake, we've been talking about getting everybody in South Africa on board for this thing for goodness knows how many years now. And it surprises me here that there's still parts of officials in front of the municipalities there that just aren't coming to the party. And I find that very disturbing. And you know, who needs to crack the whip on that? I don't know if these are necessarily hospitality projects that are being held up, or whether it's other infrastructure stuff. And the other one, of course, is the thing that came up to bubble to the surface during the Confederations Cup, which is the transport. Presumably, there's all those problems you highlighted. Then, are they not being addressed? And so that is obviously getting visitors from one place to another without getting lost and going, you know, on a tour of the suburbs is a major concern.
Before you respond, Mr. Chairman, it's Honorai and Honorable Tony.
Okay, it's a doctor to know what this is, that's a good acronym, what is the name, talking about the name of that.
Thank you, I'm just asking that the presenter gives us a detailed, big document, very big document, in simple English, so that we can actually understand. You know, as I am, I'm very confused. I don't know what he was talking about. And also that you give him a full day to be with us, so that we actually understand this thing, because we've got a responsibility to do oversight. And I don't think we are empowered, as he has presented, to do anything at all.
Okay, before Mr. Dengen, Honorable
Zulu. Thank you, Chair. I talk about the land transport bus drivers may be ready to participate. We still have 8 million people to be trained. Special taxi drivers. I wonder how are they going to participate, because at this stage, they seem not to be taken on board. They're fighting with the bus drivers now. They don't want to be part of this. Are they not going to disturb the whole thing when it comes to the 2010 soccer? Another thing, our taxi drivers, they are smoking right inside their taxi. We are not smokers, some of the people, we are not enjoying that. Right here at the airport, you hire a taxi to take you to your destination, but only to find it smelling inside. And their behavior too is terrible. Take a taxi from here to Belleville or Piedmont, just here from Cape Town, just to move around. You'll find it is terrible. They just pack the people on top of each other. If you start complaining, they say, get out, it's my taxi. If he's smoking, he's smoking. If you say no, it affects me, he say no, get out. If it affects you, and take another taxi, this is mine. I don't know how we're going to train these people. And the time is so short in such a way that I wonder, how are you going to move around the whole country to educate these people to be on the standard when they make it? Thank you.
Yes, I think that's
based
around the hotels and accommodations. I'll turn over to you, Mr.
Thanks, Chair. I think, first of all, FEDOS is the Federated Hospitality Association of Southern Africa. So we represent the hotel industry, has 1,700 members, of which one member could be Southern Sun with many hotels. I think I started by saying that our industry is incredibly complex. And I think that the full impact of that doesn't come out. To me, this was a simplified presentation because I haven't gone into any of the detail of the kind of implementations or laws that have been passed on us today. So for me to sit here for a day may help. This is not going to help. It's taken me 15 years to accumulate this knowledge and many hours of dedicated people coming through to meetings and the like. I get back to my question of let us do our jobs. We understand our industry. We need assistance from the public sector to help us deliver that. And I think rather than trying to duplicate, I can't do your jobs, and you may not be able to do mine, but let us tell you what our problems are. This issue of taxis is an issue. We have to deal with how we're going to get people around. Whether it's the taxis that strike or the buses that strike, that's a real problem. The challenge is that I can't deal with that. If my hotel people go on strike, that's the challenge that I will face. Will it be our problem at the time? Yes, it will. But I then revert you to the fact that in the World Cup finals in France, their transport went on strike as well. It's almost the right time to do it if you're trying to do negotiations. So it becomes very difficult. I will go as far as to say there's not a single compliant hotel in this country because it would be impossible. Because between the bylaws and what is required of us, it would not be possible to meet. So if someone wanted to close a hotel down for not being compliant, I can tell you that it would be possible. There are reports on the red tape and what it costs our industry, and I'm telling you that it puts more hotels out of business than creates new jobs. So to the people of the committee who say, what about creating jobs? That's our problem. Now, can we have a lawless association or industry? The answer is it's the last thing in the world we want. But with this unifying of delivery, taking these B&Bs, and the only reason that 13% of the B&Bs have signed up is because they can't afford to sign up because one of the conditions which was set was that they would be graded establishments. So we really need to decide, do we want a compliant industry with standards or do we want a big industry? Because those two don't go together. So then there are bodies, Tourism Enterprise Program, whose job it is to bring those that do want to become compliant up to standard and scratch. The triple bottom line reporting is that listed companies have to explain for their BEE status what they're doing for social economic development and the like. So it's another report, and that's what I'm calling cost of red tape. It has to be put in place as to what their delivery is to, and that's to the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Complexity beyond complexity. We haven't even got into the delivery channels of people coming into the country, how they get here, who they get here through. But the challenge we face as an industry is people make statements in newspapers that get blown out of proportion without all the facts being in place. There was discussion recently about the pricing or the commission of match, and they were quite right that it looked like the figure was now 50 or 60% commission that match were charging. But the problem was we had actually negotiated in rand, they had converted it at a rate of 7 to 1 in dollars, and then the exchange rate went to 10 to 1. So automatically there's another 30% on top of our agreed 30% commission. Now, internally we had decided that if there was that kind of discrepancy, that the money would actually be split back to the property owner. But we also agreed at the time we wouldn't discuss it until the event when we actually knew what the exchange rate was. Because as we're going now, it may well be 6 to 1 instead of 7 to 1 or as it was at that time, 10 to 1. So all I'm saying is, when the industry get upset, and then I think the newspapers can follow. But for them just to make a sensationalist statement, we are going to have people who are going to pay 10,000 rand for a crayfish and a bottle of wine, because there will be restaurants or hotels that take advantage. What I can tell you is you're not going to get those reports out of the contracted hotels. So when you hear that the associations and the industry keep on saying to people, please, please, please contract, it's to do nothing other than to protect the country from those kind of reports. So, Chair, it's, we are very happy to have a single ministry, and I must admit that they have a very good idea of what we do. But if this is the portfolio on tourism and this is the disparate gap, we need to get together more. And I ask that this is fine for 2010 and we've highlighted what the challenges are, but we need to discuss post-event what the future of tourism is. The issues on the building, ma'am, are new hotel builds that are being stifled. Now, they are either additions to existing properties, so it's not the infrastructure development, and I think, again, as a country, we couldn't ask for a better thing to be happening at the time. But I also say that a lot of pressure the industry is under from taxation and issues is that everyone believes all the infrastructure is for tourism. It's not. It's for the country. Tourism is a part of it. But we obviously are talking about hotels that need to give the go-ahead to contract before the end of this month to say that they will be ready in time to deliver for 2010. So I do ask for assistance in those, and it's between two hotel groups, which is the City Lodge Group and the Prothea Hotels Group. And when I, if you give me a contact, I will provide all that they have done to try and get these through in the normal channel. And you call it officialdom, it is a problem.
Okay, let us have a 5 minute comfort break. Come back, grab a cup of tea, come back, and then we'll close this meeting at 10 to at 1 o'clock. Where there are questions not answered, 1 o'clock cut off time.
I'm not going to be able to do that. Money for conservation.
period, or if you see the opposite of a stage, if it's a failing, so that people don't believe you have inferior quality products. And then if it is otherwise, then now you increase the prices. It will be okay for 2010. And then after 2010, what measures are there to communicate this message that yes, we are charging this amount this time, but generally, if you come next year, South Africa is a very, very competitive destination. If you get what I mean, it is in line with ordinary marketing, it's not politics.
Mr. Chair, just as if you had the World Anesthesiologist Conference, they publish the rates that they've negotiated for that conference. So they would do a book that says, for the conference period, these are the rates. These are the contracted hotels, and that's what's been decided. First of all, there are rooms that do cost 50,000 rand a night. There are rooms in this country that cost that. But there are also rooms that cost 250 rand a night. So it is not fair to say that that is the price of the room. Can you get a room for that price? And if you talk about exclusive game lodges, quite possibly. But then there's a whole lot more that's included in it. So let's not fixate on what someone could pay for a room. For exclusivity and that, there are many things.
But we talk about the normal stuff now. 3-star, 4-star, 5-star.
Okay.
City Lodge, the things that we are used to, besides the exclusive rooms.
And those are the ones that you'll find are contracted and their rates have been negotiated and are standard. The ones that are going to take chances. There was, in Germany, our room rate was 600 euros a night. That was the standard rate. On the World Cup night, the final night, people were getting up to 6,000 euros for a room. So people would come to you and say, I will pay you for that. We need to understand, because of the oversupply of people looking for rooms, that kind of thing is going to happen. It is not the standard. And after the event, our rates will then carry on as per normal, depending what happens on the economy of the world. We cannot charge more than our rooms are worth. And the rate that has been decided is a fair and equitable rate for this conference. And I call it a conference because in our eyes it's all it is.
Okay, so now we are going to have a complete indication that now for the purpose of the conference period, we are going to have that. Mama Obigana.
Jefferson, thank you very much to have this opportunity to say something. Taking my question to Sunparks. Congratulations, Sunparks. This is your week, I understand. And being your week, I'm just taking interest just to know what are you doing to accommodate the South African citizens, seeing that this is your week. Something special, you know. And one other thing, we are at an advantage being members of this portfolio committee to have this time to sit with you in this fashion, because there are so many people who would love to talk to you in camera, you know. But now, there are so many things that one would love to know from you. For instance, let's say the chairperson gives us an opportunity to have an oversight visiting the Kruger National Park, just to mention. I would love to know the behavior of the visitors, tourists, when visiting the parks towards the end. Because I think it is going to be an advantage that when you get there, you already know what not to do and what to do. Because you were with the officials from some parks. And one other thing, I would like to get it right from the horse's mouth. What times are appropriate to visit if you want to see the animals? Because normally, at times you can go there for the whole day. You become so unfortunate. You are gunning to see the lion, you're gunning to see this, but in vain, until you decide to go back home. Well, just for fun, there were, I don't know whether it was a slogan or what, there was a time chairperson where people would say, oh, the big five, you know. That's good. I did not know there's a big six line. Maybe something can just be said just there. Then, coming to Fedasa, I agree with my colleague who said, how if one day we can sit with you for some time? Not just, you know, because there is so much that we need to know. You might take it as petty things, but to us, people who are having communities, who are addressing communities, it will be so important for us to get most of the things from you. Coming to B&Bs, I wonder, how do you do it? How do you motivate them to pitch up the standards to have the best? Because even the B&Bs, I think they are rated somehow. I remember sometimes there was a competition, you know, whereby they would be awarded a certificate, the best B&B, 5,000 rand, accompanied by a certificate, something like that. I wonder if you still have that practice. And just for the last, I see here country houses. I don't just understand. What is there about? Thank you.
Excellent. I'm Anjome and Honorable Krumbok.
Yeah, I think it's just a, I'm just going to ask a general question. This may be answered by all or by some. From the presentation that we have received, and also considering the other presentations that we have received, either from the department itself or from the entities that report to the department, that all about our state of readiness for 2010. I think I'm getting a bit concerned, Chairperson, because it seems as if there is either a lack of coordination or inadequate coordination for the preparation. Even when you consider, for example, I listened to Peter, I don't know how you pronounce that, but on the question of training on people who are to participate, for instance, in 2010, particularly in the area of tourism, the figures just don't agree. Not that I'm saying the figures would be exact, but at least you'd expect, you know, some relationship between what the department has told us, what SAT has told us, and what we are getting now. So for me, I find it very confusing. It seems as if everyone is doing their own thing in their own corner.
Meanwhile, we are all working towards 2010. The same thing I think about the accommodation report that we have just received. Also, one does not get the impression that there is enough accommodation, coordination in terms of what exactly is happening. And therefore, I would want to find out whether there is a body, a structure that, for instance, brings all the stakeholders, or at least most of the stakeholders, together, so that, the question of the readiness for 2010, the state of readiness for 2010, is looked at whole family, not just only the individual stakeholders. Because it's going to affect the index of services very much. I know there are many other areas, many other sectors that have to contribute. Transport here has been mentioned. There are many others that have to contribute. But I'm only thinking of the one that you presented here today to really give the impression that there isn't a coordination. And anyway, if there isn't, why is it not possible that, for instance, there should be a coordination body, which should also involve, in my opinion, Chairperson, the department itself. Like I say, the department has already told us quite a lot about what has been done, and so on and so forth. But I'm trying to relate that, for instance, to what I've been listening to today. I don't seem to get the fact that there is that working together. Thank you very much.
I'd just like to quiz Dunin again about some of the big sort of macro figures. My understanding, and it seemed to be confirmed by his address to us, was that the requirement by the FIFA family as such, being the officials and players and all the attendant personnel that go with that, is for about 45,000 rooms during the course of the FIFA World Cup. Just confirm that, because that's a starting point, I think. What I'd like to establish is what our total requirement is nationally in terms of Fed Hart's estimate that we need for the World Cup. I believe he mentioned that he thought we had about 100,000 rooms available in total, which would seem to be the difference between the graded establishment and everybody else. But if you could just clarify that particular figure, and also compare that for us, I'm sure he has that information, what he thinks we actually need. There are going to be, at the last estimate, maybe 475,000 people coming out to watch the World Cup. If we only have, for example, 150,000 rooms nationally available, which is 50,000 more than the figure we think we have at the moment, that implies we're going to have three people per room. So if we could just clarify that and get a better picture for the committee as to exactly what we are going to need and what we think we have, then we can establish what the shortfalls are and interrogate that a bit more comprehensively. And my second question again revolves around something Mr. Durbin said, and that was something I'm a little bit unclear about. And he mentioned that, I think it was in terms of the match contracts, people coming out under a match negotiated contract and staying here, and you must please correct me if I'm wrong, we'll be staying in one location and using that as a base for the entire World Cup. And then the transport is then provided from there to go to the different places where they might have bought match tickets. not the capital MATA, the actual football matches themselves. Can you just amplify a little bit on that? Because it seems to me that seems to be a fairly sort of rigid part of that negotiated contract, and I wasn't sure if I understood correctly there, so if you could just expand on that. Thanks.
Any further questions? Okay, before I hand it over to you, let me just try and clarify one thing. Apparently, Mr. Dengan talked of over-regulation, is it over-regulation of the industry? if the industry can submit those what it is unhealthy about to the minister, that is some regulations come from trade and industry, some come from tourism, but we are tourism perhaps if we could be handed over to the Minister of Tourism, and then with your comments, and then they get evaluated there, and then if perhaps then you do not get any comfort as we can enter into the fly, but in the meantime just send your consent, our approval regulation to the minister. And I think there could be a reaction to that, either by actually scrapping some or perhaps explaining what purpose they serve or whatever, but it doesn't augur well for any one of us to feel that we are overburdened with regulations that we do not understand. Where we do not understand as well as we from where we come from, we can even question the minister why this regulation, that type of thing. But for any industry, especially an organized industry, not to interact with us is not a good sign. It's a democracy, our decisions have to be inclusive. Even if we disagree, we're going to disagree knowing where you are coming from. I would like to meet with you with the gentleman from the side of the Daba. It's not that there are things that are non-negotiable. From time to time, things change, and from time to time, the situation changes and it needs a review. So from my side, I would like to add that comment. And then you can start then answering questions according to the way you say.
Thanks, Chair. We'll start with the questions, a set of questions relating to Sun Parks, which were raised by an honorable member here. After which I would like Mr. Phillips to also respond to the earlier question that was only responded to by Mr. Dangan in relation to our pricing approach. So that it can contextualize us for some purposes. Indeed, this week is what we call South African National Parks Week. Basically, what we do is try and promote knowledge about national parks for this period of time for communities and for general public in South Africa. For this week, we allow free entrance into the parks, but not free accommodation, just the entrance park, which we call conservation fees, but in any sense it's actually an entrance fee. As far as how we control the behavior of visitors to our parks, we do have the ranger corps, as well as our traffic officers who ensure that people do actually drive at appropriate speed so that they don't hurt animals in the park. And in terms of what the rangers look for, obviously it's in relation to, for example, issues of feeding animals, that we are not supposed to feed animals. They ensure that where there is a higher noise level than acceptable, that they intervene and ensure that those issues are addressed. Indeed, at some point we did accommodate a visit by this committee for experiential and oversight, as the honorable member was indicating that previously there was an opportunity for you for specific issues that you would want to see. At that point, the visit was related to our infrastructure development so that you can see for yourself the need that was provided. So it really depends. You'll be obliged in terms of your request, which will be appropriately looked at in terms of whatever issues you'd like to engage with Sun Parks on, if it requires a physical visit. sense of when it is appropriate to see animals is a difficult question. For example, during this period of August, September, in terms of our flower seasons, there are specific parks that have flowers like Mamakwa or West Coast. So at this specific season, you'll be able to see very beautiful flowers. But in terms of animals, take for example Kruger. Kruger, as others would like to say, is the size of Israel. So it's like going into a country, and it's unpredictable. It's not like in a zoo where you predict that in that specific area you will see issues, you will see things. So it's difficult, except that in winter, obviously, when the bush is not that dense, you are able to see things. And as has been indicated, indeed, there's an addition to the big five in terms of shark and whale. Increasing the number to 7. So I'd like Mr. Phillips to handle the issue relating to prices so that we can contextualize our approach to the pricing strategy on our part.
And the pricing and the standoff approach that like the entire industry that works with MASH is an agreement. There will be an escalation of 16% from the 2007 rack rate, our published rate, which we then applied to our inventory. In our case, we only offer a room-only rate, and we then added a breakfast and a lunch. We also added an activity per day, and then also we have a contingency and escort fee, because we've got to escort vehicles coming at different times of tourists and no experience, as well as additional services we place in those three camps in the Kruger case to deal with the people in those camps. So our rates were built along those lines. So if you actually take our current published rate and the rate that was published by MASH and converted into US dollars, they actually got a better rate because of the 16% escalation. As you know, CPI hit 13% last year. And we were affected by that. In fact, what we contract with MASH was slightly below what we currently published generally out there right now. And then, of course, the additional add-ons that we put in there. So if they were to compare apples with apples, and they took our room rate, and I've got an example, in the newspaper, what was compared, and the one, for example, the one rate that was used. The rate that we used for one person in the 2007 rate that we put was our published rate was 500 rand for a single person. And the rate for 2009, which was escalated from on the 2007 rate of 16%, is 580 rand, and that's what we contracted. So there's no, it was purely on that basis. There's certainly no fact built into our accommodation rate at all. But that was the basis of the whole industry contracted on. On one other issue that was raised initially was on the marketing. What should be done for 2010 around the marketing? Essentially, we're going to have the best marketing machine you can ever have in 2010. And what we need to do is the old saying, keep the clients you have. And when they come here, we've got to make sure they get the best experience ever. And that is what will get them to come back and what will spread the word. No amount of billboards or newspaper advertising will get them to come back. It's the experience that will get them to come back. And that's what we have to have in place during that time. And that is what the whole industry has been working on. And that's why in this issue about transport is so important, because that's the key element that will put all these things together to make sure people get there in a reasonable time period and are able to get to the site that they want to see during that time, or get to the events that they need to get to on time. So that's the two key issues that I need to raise. There was one other point that was raised around everybody working together. Why is it seem to be disjointed? Essentially, the LOC's role is to pull those elements together, but there certainly has been elements of people not working together and people going on their own, somewhat, in some cases, parallel routes, but not communicating directly. I think that has been looked at very carefully now, and I know in the last few MINNEC meetings with the MECs of tourism and the agencies, as well as Tourism Business Council, servicing Fed Harbor and various other agencies have come together and say what are the key elements. And SFT has, is chairing that committee in terms of 2010 to make sure that the communication, the marketing, the logistics, all are talked about in one forum. That is what's happening at the moment. So certainly there were issues, but it is being addressed at this point right now. We're very comfortable there is a better focus than there was generally at the moment.
So Terry, in terms of the issue you raised on pricing, we haven't inflated prices, nor have we given a say on those prices.
There's a question that has been raised by the honourable member there, whether or not is there coordination so far as the skills development is concerned. And our response to that, we're not sure as to what has been prevailed to the committee by the Department of Tourism. Safe to say that, look, from our side, we can confirm that, look, there is coordination, but we do have the members of officials of the department serving in our board. And secondly, in terms of the practice and the requirements, when we submit our plans for what we intend doing in the following years, those plans would not be approved by the Department of Labor if the Department of Tourism as well as the Department of Sports and Recreation has signed off those particular plans. So basically, they are aware of what we are going to deliver, the capacity which we can, as well as the resources that actually we put behind it. But invariably, you may find that, look, what they have indicated to the portfolio committee was relating to what they, as a department, given their resources, that they will be able to put across so far as the skills development is concerned. But, however, as I indicated, that I'm not privy to that. And we consulted a significant number of institutions in preparation of those plans. But right now, we're going to have the plan for 2010-2015. And there's already a plan put in place where parties or organizations will be able to participate in the focus groups with a view to be able to ensure that they are one and part of this system. Thanks.
If I may, the questions down the way. Ma'am, there's no recommendation that a B&B has to be 3, 4, or 5 star. In fact, if it aspires to be a 1 star, if it's not graded, that's already getting up on the chain. There's been a lot of comments about the commitments of industry, but government also has to realize they've made a commitment that they will support graded establishments, and they will support establishments that have adhered to the BE charter, the compliance. So the mechanism for getting establishments to become more and more established, graded, regulated, is that they will then get business from government. And that is across the board for the whole industry. We don't define or differentiate business in any other way than that is that is committed to what the structures and regulations are and those that are outside of that. We will support anyone who is graded coming through the process. So it's a business decision. It will cost to be graded, but at the same time, you will then get to extra business, should be getting extra business from the government structure. Okay. On the room numbers, the actual number that match needs is 55,000 rooms, not the 45. And the 100,000 rooms that I spoke about are fit-for-purpose rooms, being 3, 4, and 5 star, across the board, but not necessarily tourism-graded. So they may have been graded by other authorities, which might be the AA awards or diamonds or portfolio of places. Still standards, but not the tourism-graded. We have had meetings with the minister to resolve that, so a bigger pool has become available. In South Africa, one of the big issues that we have is called VFR, and that's called Visiting Family and Relatives. And we believe that figure is up to at least 25% of international visitors with ties and friends in the country. And a lot of the accommodation of these numbers, and you mentioned 475, I think it's high. I think we're working more on 300 to 350,000 international visitors at that time.
Over the entire period.
The other thing is exactly that, is that it is all spread over time. The biggest demand for accommodation will be the first 2 weeks when you've got the 32 matches taking place. So when it then splits down to the round of 16, I think you will have less people. The split, as if you look on the match advisory notes, is for a ticket for a game, is a split of about 40% local to 60% foreigners. Now, if you just take your stadium, which seats 80,000, No, your stadium here?
No, my stadium.
Well, whichever one it is, one of the big new ones, you need to understand you don't have enough rooms for that.
66,000,
yeah. Okay, you don't have enough rooms to satisfy that. So the reason why you are going to be moved is that there may well be 20,000 here in rooms here in Durban and Johannesburg. They will bring those people here for the stadium to make it full. You can't possibly cater accommodation-wise for that number of people. So that's the reason why this moving and logistics, and that was what was communicated right at the beginning. To understand that in Germany, for them to get to 50,000 contracted rooms was easy. There were over 200,000 in some of those cities. We have to understand tourism in this country is new, and we don't have that kind of capacity. So it's the only way they've been able to deal with that. That's why Nashville, Mauritius, the trip from Mauritius to here may actually take less time than someone traveling from, say, Spear to Johannesburg or Polokwane or whatever the case is. So it is a logistical World Cup. And the contracts with Match deal that the hotels will then be on that logistical path. If you are not contracted, you will be off of that path, which will then mean you've got to sort out your own transport for your guests to get them to games, and that is if they have tickets. And the ticket pooling is an international, basically a lottery system. They talk about those tickets being sometimes 15 times oversubscribed. So for every one ticket available, 15 people are trying to get it. So it's complex. Just the ticket distribution is complex. So, but the ratio is about 60% foreigners to 40% locals at the moment. If that answers your questions.
The one thing I was trying to maybe I didn't follow, the total number of rooms that bedrooms I think are required
I said that fit for purpose rooms, I believe there are about 125 fit for purpose rooms. But they're not tourism graded rooms.
Yeah. So is it 125?
Okay. It's 100 rooms, but then other accommodation which will be timeshare and the like, so rooms that will be available for people to sleep in.
Okay, but that's what we've got available. What I need to understand is how many do we need so we can establish the discrepancy.
No, okay. No one can give you that figure. Yeah. It is not possible, and one of the discussions on the Minister's Roadshow was that we are talking about, as KwaZulu-Natal and yourselves and the Cape have done, is actually to have a registration process for tourism establishments. Because that is the only way we're actually going to know the definitive number of hotels, B&Bs, and what the number of rooms and beds available is.
Okay. In fact, I also want to ask a question around the skills. Is there any shortage in your industry in Kedasa now?
Mr. Chair, we work very closely with the theatre. That 70% of the fund is coming from our industry with our levy, training levy. So there are areas that are discrepancy. The SPIRE study, which is SBIR, whatever that acronym was for, highlighted that there are a lot of challenges, but industry will train where it's needed. Again, the level of staff could always be better, and I think that's what we're aspiring to, but we do work together and the training is happening. But that is driven, it's not creating new jobs from tourism, it's making sure the people who are employed are better skilled. Yeah. And Mr. Chair, you had another, your original question?
Yeah, in fact, it is around the catering for future markets. We which fares could be with some portion of the company. Because, I mean, normally previously operated around the bottom line. What do you think the government should do to support the future of tourism? And I think it could be you, it could be this from the side of the team with them.
South African Tourism have a huge budget for marketing. There's a campaign going through with Sky and CNN at the moment, which is welcoming people here, and that's all in collaboration with what FIFA were given in value in kind for marketing and advertising. That and the campaigns, and I think that is where industry is working. The role of South African Tourism and then of private industry is being clearly defined. The provinces become a difficult one because of duplication of service and marketing. But there is a campaign underway which is called Fly the Flag, which is then around a consolidation of the marketing efforts. So, and again, I think you can hit it on it, is if we make the experience a good one, we can't ask for more marketing in the world than what is happening to us now.
I think there are two key markets which I think we need to consider. One is the inbound market, but the other is the domestic market and the African market coming into South Africa. The domestic market, I think, is a key component that South African Tourism is focusing on through the ShopLess campaign. But in Sandbox, we said 80% of our business is domestic. And during this time when other markets are suffering, inbound markets, because of the recession, we're not really feeling that pinch to the extent that others may be because we've got a strong domestic market. So I think it's a two-pronged approach. One is make sure your international marketing is done and the budgets are well-funded in that area. And the other one is making sure that we have campaigns to drive domestic tourism. We've got an incredible country and an incredible region, and that's what we also need to drive. And that's a big weakness at the moment in terms of tourism.
Thank you.
Just to follow up again, the figure I mentioned now, 300 to possibly 350,000 international visitors only, I'm a little bit concerned because when we had the AXA briefing a couple of weeks ago, they had that figure 100,000 more. And I'm just wondering, and that's why I said 450,000 or maybe 475, because the newspaper was going to what, 475,000 international tourists. I'm just wondering why there is that discrepancy, because, you know, clearly someone has not got it right. And I'd like to think that Sedaza has got it right because they're the sharp end of that particular delivery thing. I'd like Mr. Donny just to comment on that, because maybe we need to get AXA back and say, have you got your figures right? So that's the first question. And then just, I know I'm not dog with a bone on this one, but did I understand you right, Mr. Duncan, that you're saying that no one actually knows how many rooms are actually needed, or were you in fact saying nobody really knows how many rooms you actually have available? Because it's two different things. And I think it's two different questions. Or is it actually both? Because that would mean we need to do a lot more research and get to grips with this problem.
Okay. I'll answer the first one as diplomatically as I can. I think a lot of people are using 2010 to secure budget to do a lot of things. So that will answer your first question. The second one is that at the end of the day, we do not know how many rooms are available because not all the rooms are on a specific registered process. So if you were to open your house to someone, however many rooms you open now become rooms available, but they're not on the registered thing. So we have a very fair idea of how many people will be coming in because they have to fly in or, as we've heard today, come in by boat, so we will know how many people are coming in. There are enough rooms to satisfy that need, and that number will vary. We will only know that post-event, and also what the registration of the SADC people coming into the country ends up as, because when we have our international tourism arrivals, those arrivals through the borders of Zimbabwe and Botswana are always discrepancies in our stats. because they are seen as international visitors. So the final figures will need a lot of analysis, but the answer to the first question, we do not know how many rooms are available here.
Okay. I'm established to that, and I understand exactly what you mean. But if in fact we don't know how many rooms actually are available because these places aren't graded or on the register, how can you in fact know that you will have enough? Because you also said that. I mean, surely you need to know what the demand is in order to know whether you have enough or not. So, I mean, are you assuming, for example, is there a set ratio? If we let's accept the figure of 300,000 to 350,000 international visitors, is there perhaps an international standard, say, for example, 3.5 people per room? Maybe a dad and then his wife brings their son or something, and that means we only need 100,000 rooms. We don't know if we have 100,000, but we know what the demand is. Do we know actually how many rooms we need based on that 250,000 people coming in?
The rooms are issued for one person, but are available to carry two. Obviously, we can't have two people who don't know each other. So the answer is, well, we shouldn't. So the answer is, yeah. 50,000 rooms could equate to 100,000 if they all double, but we can't assume that. I can quite comfortably say there will be enough place for everyone to sleep, but we are then going to have to collate and bring all of the different accommodations into an easily accessible pool, and we are working together with Match so that that becomes a legacy that is left behind. So it doesn't matter what booking system, what engine, you will then have access to that. So let's just call it the last minute helpline. When you need a room, you will have one place to go that will then obviously have whatever, and that could be non-graded, it could be your homestay, it could be anything. But there will be enough space for all the visitors come 2010.
Thanks very much. Perhaps going towards the end, it would be interesting to hear from the Sun Park about rural development, what type of value they add to rural community, especially surrounding their area. I think the question was asked. And because it also has got another element to it, that is the element of safety of the parks and then fighting poaching in the parks. They could be a partner in the fight against poaching and this thing, sustainable park development.
As we attempted to indicate when the question was raised previously, most of our parks actually okay in the rural areas. And as a result, all the activities that actually have an economic result from the existence of that national park. So some of it happens by virtue of the presence or existence of the park, not necessarily actively through the next program from our social. Because as we were talking about accommodation, even bed and breakfast entities would all care closer to a national park in order to capture the visitors into the national park. Supplies of fresh produce into that national park, supplies of our requirements in terms of procurement from issues of toilet rolls to soap, etc., would happen in many instances from local communities. So the only way really that we can is through organized programs such as procurement programs, but also in terms of, for example, in a bigger park like Kula National Park, you have communities that buffer the Kula National Park. Some of them, if they are aligned to the protection of the environment that is closer to a national park, we have what is called contractual park agreements.
think let us come to the conclusion of this meeting by saying thank you very much for your contribution. We have learned a lot, but I think also it has assisted you in order to reflect on what the different stakeholders are doing, and then to also reflect on your own businesses, whether your business plans are in line with the thinking in government and the thinking of your customers and the other stakeholders, the communities around the plant, the needs, and suspend this a bit, and then the need for us as a country to move forward together, because we need from time to time to interact, and then from time to time, please do make submissions to the policy where you think there is need, because sometimes from where we are sitting, we also need advice, we need proposals, we need to know the concerns of communities in order to respond appropriately. These are the things that relate to governance. It is not a one-way process. It's not a question of us summoning you, but if you have any other need, as well, where you think we can assist, let us know, and then let us interact and see where we put the country forward. It's not about us, but it is about the public interest out there, the long-term interest, and then your organizations, firstly to you, but also do remember that without a stable country, we cannot have our organization. With those few words, I say thank you very much to all of you.
Excuse me, can I have your business card, please?